They say you're supposed to take something home from every meeting. I got a coin now. I thought it was just the donuts, but... Thank you, I appreciate it. Step 12. Having had a spiritual... This is a very old copy of one of the originals of the 12 steps. And in the original one it said, having had a spiritual experience. And then they changed it. I think they took two or three conferences to change one word. But this reads, having had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps. And that's what he used to say when I came into the program. We tried to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I know the new one says, having had a spiritual awakening. This step logically separates into three parts, and the first one being the spiritual experience. This term in the spiritual awakening in the Big Book means upon careful reading that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many forms. When I first read this step, I thought, this is the catch. This is where I got to go door to door and sell Bibles or something for AA or Big Books. And that was what I was supposed to do. And, you know, I was, you know, you're always waiting for something to drop. But it didn't have anything to do with that. And when they talk about this spiritual experience, it says here, do not get the impression that these personality changes or spiritual experience must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. Among our rapidly growing membership, such transformation, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are the educational variety because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends and relatives are aware of the difference long before we are aware of us changing ourselves. And a lot of times people will say to you, wow, you've really changed, or especially people you haven't seen in a long time. You know, it's something, it's hard for us to see because we're in the middle of it. We're looking out, we're not really looking in. And when people come up and say, wow, you're really doing well and you're really changing, I used to think, what am I supposed to say to that? And my sponsor said to me, just say thank you. You know, because it's hard sometimes to accept compliments. The new man gradually realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself or herself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. Education and self-discipline does slowly bring about a change, but I think working all through the steps to get to this moment, I think that's, you realize that this was not something that you did. That it took all of us, and it's sometimes it's a spiritual experience in itself to realize that. You know, I'm at this point in my life now and things have changed so much. And this is the kicker. It says, with few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Sometimes it comes on you and you go, wow. You know, you don't know what that is. It's kind of weird, like suddenly you're hearing a new voice and it's not that old voice, you know. any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problem in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his or her mind to spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spiritual side of the program, which is willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness, and they are the essentials of recovery. These are indispensable. It would be inconsistent to mince words over spiritual values. It's not a debate. It's personal. It's what you believe. It's not a philosophy that AA actually carries. We each have our own beliefs, and from whatever religion or whatever, wherever you come from. But it's not a topic for debate. It's a topic to share, but it's not measured one against another. It's yours. Without the spiritual principles, and this is a very profound statement, without the spiritual principles of the 12 steps, there can be no AA. Instead, it would be a group of disgruntled alcoholics temporarily on the wagon, living in a perpetual state of mental drunkenness. We'd always be arguing. We would have no unity. We'd always be trying to one-up each other because our egos are so big that we want to be the one to lead AA into the 22nd century, you know. And so we have to be careful of that. The second part of that step says carrying the message to others. We do it in many ways. By setting a good example of complete sobriety, by attending meetings every week, by assisting at meetings, doing these jobs, setting up, by supporting meetings financially, by making 12-step calls, by owning and loaning to new people a copy of the Big Book. When was the last time you got a new person a Big Book? By encouraging those who find the way difficult, by serving as an officer or on a group committee, by making coffee. Better coffee than this. Setting up and cleaning up. But you know, if you criticize the coffee maker, they'll say it's your turn to make it. Yeah. We do any or all of the foregoing cheerfully and willingly. We do these things not because not out of our own self-interest, but we do these things because someone did it for us. There had to be an AA here for us to go to originally. And you always hear people say, thank you for keeping the doors open. The people that actually are here week in and week out. Years ago, when Cleveland was trying to run AA instead of New York, they used to have a pamphlet out, and it was called The Faithful Few. And The Faithful Few, when you read it, it talked about going to an AA meeting, looking around the meeting, seeing that person in that seat every week. They were the faithful few. And those were the people that you gravitated towards because they were the ones who upheld the meeting, who took care of things, made sure everything was run right. And it's a very important thing. People who do service work in Alcoholics Anonymous are blessed by God. They're truly blessed. And I hope that your sobriety is so important to you that if you're asked to do such things, that you won't hesitate. Do them gladly. Carrying the message is a premise upon which AA was founded. Rendering this service, we immunize ourselves against taking that first drink. We help restore faith in God and physical health to drinkers who may have lost all hope of recovery. I used to run 10Ks and marathons and jogging when I was first newly sober. And, of course, you know, a friend just asked me to start running, and of course, being an alcoholic, I had to run a marathon. You know, I couldn't just run a 10K, you know. And when I would run through the park, and there were a lot of guys in the park that used to sit there and drink out of paper bags, and I'd run, and then I'd stop there, and I'd sit on the park bench with them. And they all knew who I was, and they would ask about the program. And they would say, is so-and-so going to a meeting? And I'd say, well, why don't you go find out? Or how's the meetings going? Well, why don't you go find out? And they said, you know, they used to call me Jimmy. You know, Jimmy, that AA stuff is really working good for you. You know, and at that time, we didn't have it was just me and my wife. We didn't have any kids or anything. And we didn't have a house or nothing. And later on, some of them guys came into the program, which was amazing. I could name them off, but you probably wouldn't know. Most of them are passed away. And they were great members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were able to come to my home, and they were able to see my kids. And it was such a wonderful feeling, you know, just having them come there. And that was the essence of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that was the top, that was the cream. And I really loved doing that. My sponsor was big in service, and he put me on the 12-step list. And of course, the first 2 years of my sobriety, I wasn't working. Back in 78, jobs were scarce, very scarce. Interest rates were 21%. Things weren't very good. So I wasn't working. Well, I did a little work for AA people out of my truck. But of course, being on the 12-step list, 3 to 4 times a week, I was getting calls to go and pick up people and take them to the hospital. And that was one of the most wonderful experiences. There were a couple harrowing moments, of course, when my sponsor punched a guy out in the front of my truck. That was pretty cool. And we picked him up in a bar. The bartender called us. Get him out of here. Well, we picked him up. We took him to the hospital. And he stayed sober until he died 22 years later. And he was from the Gertrude Barber Center. And he couldn't read or write. And so we got him, John Mowry got him tapes on the 12 steps. And he eventually married and they had a family. And I got the privilege of 12-step sponsoring him for many years. And I had to repeat everything at least 3 to 4 times when I said it to him for him to grasp it. And who benefited from that? I did. Because I kept hearing it over and over and over again. So that was just, that's what I talk about. People who have long-term sobriety that go out, they forgot the 12-step. We have to carry this message no matter what. Or anybody who goes back out. The concept is to stay here and carry this message. When you forget to carry the message, you start to drift slowly away from AA. God's entrusted us with a special gift of healing for sick alcoholics. We're the only ones who work, people. We're it. You know, when the alcoholic calls, the doctors don't work, the psychiatrists don't work, the ministers don't work. They come to the alcoholics, the people who understand. We understand the anxiety of wanting that first drink. We understand powerlessness. We understand how helpless a human being can get when he's drinking because we've been there. They don't understand only because they haven't been there. And we can relate to someone who is going through that. And that's why that bond is there. And it's a special gift. And if you have that gift where you're able to sit. And the best thing about 12-stepping somebody is you end up becoming a good listener. Because people want you to listen to them. You need to hear them. Hear them first and then talk later. Listen to them. Listen to them, get it out. Once they get it out, once you've listened to their story, then you can share your story. You can say, this is what happened to me. And it's so important that we share back and forth that way. The principle of working with others is sound as it is founded upon the ageless axiom, give and you shall receive. When you give your life to somebody else, you usually benefit more than the others. And it's been such an amazing story. My life has been an amazing story. I couldn't even write it. Everything I ever wanted in life, everything I ever wanted, I got. The most important thing was peace of mind. The ability to be calm no matter what's going on around me. The ability to not respond to what's going on around me. All that. The ability to act the way I want to and not react. That's all because of the 12 steps. It's all because of working with other people. I remember where I came from. I came from nowhere. A bottomless pit. This is my favorite step. You probably can tell. Problems involving the lending of money, keeping alcoholics in our home. My wife used to come downstairs and say, who's that sleeping on the couch? Sometimes they wouldn't accept them at the hospital. And so I would not leave them back out on the street. And so they would sleep on our couch and I would feed them and take them to a meeting. And, hopefully they stayed. But it is that act of doing for others that keeps my life great. And I'm not trying to toot my own horn here. I was told to do these things if I wanted to get better. My sponsor said, and Joe always used to tell me, if you really want to stay sober, keep a new guy close. It's a lot easier that way. These guys I sponsor today, they pick on me all the time. They help me way more than I help them. And the third part of that step is we practice these principles in all our affairs. The last part of the 12th step is a real purpose that all 12 steps lead to a new way of life, a design for living. It shows how to live rightly, think rightly, and achieve happiness. How do we go about it? We resolve to live our life a day at a time. When you go to a meeting, if you've been around a long time, and you go to a meeting, concentrate on the reading of the 12 steps because you've heard them so much you just don't hear them anymore. Concentrate on what people are saying up here. When you do that, you discipline your mind to be attentive. And when you're attentive, it helps you when you 12 step other people because you listen to them. And people want to be listened to. We pray each day for guidance for that day. What is my, everybody says, well, what does my higher power want me to do today? He wants you to be happy. Number one, we absolutely insist on it, to be happy, to get away from that misery, that miserable thinking and drinking and problems, to get away from all that crap that was in our lives, to have hope, to become better. And like I said when I first started this, we aspire to be better than what we are. And we take this as serious as each breath that we get in. We pray each night. Thanks for the day. We know where our power comes from, so we have to pray at night. We resolve to keep our head and to forego unreasonable anger no matter what the situation arises. Anger. It's the downfall of many alcoholics. And it's based upon ego, mostly. We always want to be right. We always want to... We don't love making mistakes, so we get angry. You know, there's a whole list of things. I think I went over them earlier. We practice patience. Anybody that's got a grandchild knows that. I have a 2-year-old granddaughter. And I learned a lot, you know, from my kids. I used to say, I don't know who's worse, my kids when they were 4 or 5 years old or the people I sponsor. Because they're both going, wah, wah, wah. You know? I want what I want when I want it. How come you got this? How come you got that? Why don't I have that? That's my toy. And you learn. We learn. We observe and we learn. And that's where the patience comes in. Because it'll pass. We know that it'll pass. When she's jumping up and down, or when one of my guys I'm sponsoring are jumping up and down wondering why things aren't happening fast enough from them, we just sit back and we say, patience. Things happen in God's time, not ours. I wish I had that kind of power, but I don't. And we try to keep calm and relaxed. Now, it's very important. Whatever little ordinary situation, as well as big situations arise, and we have all those, we look at it calmly and fairly with an open mind, then act on it in exact accordance with the simple, true principles that AA has taught us and will teach us in all our affairs. All of our affairs. We deal with people, situations, and because we get up and we know that we can't, anger is a luxury we can't afford, there are things that we are not to have. Sometimes God says no. Sometimes it's just not going to work out. Sometimes you're going to lose. Sometimes you're not going to get that promotion. Sometimes these things don't happen. Sometimes you get that promotion and you get drunk because now you think you're better than whatever. And so mindfulness, be mindful. And we like to run things by the people that are close to us in the fellowship, our sponsor or close friends in the fellowship. And we always take each other's inventories. I hear today it's very popular, don't tell me what to do. Bullshit. In AA we tell you what to do because we don't want to see you die. You know, I'm not going to go home and say, geez, I wish I would have told him that. I hope he don't go out and drink tonight. I told him that. He may hate me. I hope he hates me all the way to 20 years of sobriety. But I'll be honest with him. I'll be honest. I've seen too many people die. Too many. Finally, as long as we have peace of mind and some sense of the presence of God, we are on the beam and we're safe. Even if other outer things seems to be confused or very dark, but as soon as we get off the beam, we are in danger. We are off the beam the moment we are angry or resentful or jealous or frightened or depressed. When such feelings arise, we should immediately get back on the beam by turning quietly to God in thought. Sometimes it's just a matter of walking away and saying a prayer. Just help me get through this next hour. My sister was dying, and my mother was in the room, and I had been sober about 18 years. And I went into the room to see her, and she is a lovely person. She was a great person. She loved the fact that I was an Alcoholics Anonymous. But she also knew something about Alcoholics Anonymous. She said to me, you're in AA and you can't lie. And I said, "What do you want? What do you want to know?" "Am I dying?" she said. And the doctors had all told us that she was dying. She had had 38 operations. There was no more. And she had gone through enough. And I said, "Yeah, you're dying." And my mother immediately looked at me and said, "I hate you." And 2 years later, she made an amends to me. She said she couldn't tell her own daughter the truth. And the doctor came in and asked if I would sign a do not resuscitate. And I said, gladly, that she's tired and she wants to go home. And I left, and the next day she passed away. And for a year, and I got angry at God because I had to go through that. I didn't want to go through that. I wanted to run away. I didn't want to stand there against the fire and be the brick that you're supposed to be. And they played a song at her funeral. And just last week, I could never listen to that song. And that was 22 years ago. I could not listen to that song. And then last week I heard it on the radio, and I usually turn the channel, and I left it on, and I listened to the whole thing, and I was thinking about her. And then I was in Walmart and I bought the song, and I listened to it for even coming over here. It was Led Zeppelin, Stairway to Heaven. And I've listened to it and thought about her. And I hope she had suffered greatly, and I hoped that she's at peace now. But that was an experience that if I was drunk would have been horrifying. I would have been throwing things in the ICU, smashing stuff all like I used to, break walls, act like I would have been the victim. Poor me. But Alcoholics Anonymous taught me that 12-step work is for all. It's for your family, to be of service to them. Once you become a better person, once you rise above things, that you can help others. It doesn't matter what their circumstances, if you're helping them across the street, if you're picking up groceries, if you're giving somebody a ride, whatever it might be. God got us here because He wanted us to work for Him. That's the trade-off. And as long as we work for Him and we keep our head in that frame of mind, as long as we continue to do that, sobriety will be there. And hopefully, we get to see that in other people. The greatest thing that happens to me in Alcoholics Anonymous when I sponsor somebody is when they bring a new person to a meeting. It's overwhelming joy for me. Because I know that legacy is going to continue. And hopefully I've done my job. Our heritage of sane living is denied us until we fully recognize and treat our alcoholism as a physical, mental, and spiritual illness. Our heritage of sane living is restored when we follow and live the 12 steps of the AA program. This has been a looking back for me on the last 40 years of my sobriety. In all that time, I've always been to meetings. I've never not gone to meetings. I've always stayed close to a sponsor. I've done what they've told me to do. And out of all of that, the benefits far outweigh anything I've ever done for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, they say when anyone anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to always be there. And I hope that's true. I hope it's always true. I've been to meetings all over the world. I've met people from all different countries. And they're all alcoholics. They're just like us. Just drunks. And we relate, whether you speak English or not. It's kind of weird that way, but we relate to each other on a level that's above. It's been an honor and a privilege to be here with you for the last how many weeks, and I hope that you got something out of it. I know I did. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. Now we go for questions and answers. Well, he'll answer. You guys can ask questions. Anybody got a question?
You always do.
Inspiring, Jim. Before I ask you a question, I just wanted to... My mind went crazy a minute ago because a couple days ago, my mom, who's 87, appeared with a new inherited T-shirt under her sweater, and it says Led Zeppelin on it. So that was just astounding. And the faithful few that you talked about that are always in the same seats, they were in the bars too, those faithful few, 20 years later, and they're still in the same. So I'm not sure if this question makes any sense to you, but the 12th step, for me, I always think about newcomers or people that don't have a lot of time. Have you found in all your years of sobriety that that works on old-timers also?
We have an old timer that's in Sarah Reed right now, and going up to see her is like 12-stepping, because when we talk AA, you know, so it doesn't matter if it's new or old person. I guess traditionally you would say, yeah, it used to be you'd get a call at 2 a.m. and you'd go out and you'd pick up somebody and you would talk to them and hopefully hook up for a meeting or take them to a hospital, depending upon how bad they were. I did pick up a guy one time on Parade Street. He was living under a porch. He was a big Indian guy. And he smelled really bad. And the only one I had with me was Herbie from the Soldiers and Sailors Home. He's passed away now. He was the only one available to go with me on a 12-step call. But we took him down to the club, and... They sat in the Serenity Room at the club, and I told Herbie to keep an eye on him, and I went and got coffee. And the Saturday night meeting was just about to start, and all of a sudden I heard the guy that I brought down there leading up there on the podium. And the funny thing about that was there were two police officers who were in the program who escorted him off the podium into the Serenity Room, and there were 6 or 7 people who came from the meeting, and we sat and we had a meeting just with him. But you don't see that anymore. You don't see that. And it's kind of, AA's lost a little bit there, you know. I'd like to see, you know, it's good to you know, to sit, but sometimes, you know, when you're working with somebody, you can't have all the answers. So if the more people that are around, they give you, you know, that help out. It's so, yeah, you know, and old timers who are who may be suffering physical or mental or whatever issues, that, you know, visit them. You know, go see them and maybe cheer them up a little bit. Tell them a stupid joke. You know, tell them that you know, that people miss them, because, you know, our power in here is our sense of belonging, and so when we're not here, sometimes we lose that. You know,
mm-hmm. Jim. Hello.
Oh, there you are.
Thanks an awful lot for this series. It's a beautiful job. So practice these principles in all our affairs. I'm assuming these principles are based on the steps. How does it translate?
Honesty, open-mindedness, willingness. Starts with honesty. We used to deal all of our affairs kind of shady. You know, I work with a guy, and he was bringing stuff home from work, and I told him, stop doing that. You're sober now. You're the one who's going to cry because you get fired because you took something from work. So those principles of honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness that you get from working the principles of the 12 steps, you take out into the world. You know? So when you deal with somebody, face up. Honesty, keep an open mind, and willingness to be of service, you know, to other people. A lot of times we don't want to do that because we're lazy, because we think we know better. But humility is our greatest strength. Without it, we're done. Through all things, we have... An old timer once told me, you have to deal with all things through humility. And humility is just humility is described to me as an honest assessment of who I am. Not the trumped up thing that I think I am, or as low as I might think I am because of where I came from, but who I really am. That's who I got to project out into the world. And that's where you find, that's where you get that, is through these steps. You know, you're not as bad as you thought you were. You're not as good as you thought you were. You know? So you're just you. And that's okay today. It's just okay to be me. And that's where the peace of mind comes in. You know? That's where it comes.
Thanks. Oh, geez. I don't need microphone. Thanks, Jim. This has been a joy listening to you. And there was something that you alluded to that you didn't really talk about. And because I had one very bad experience on making a 12-step call alone to someone I had sponsored who went back, God, please address, you know, not going on 12-step calls alone.
Some of the guys may remember many years ago, a man by the name of B.I. Brady, his pigeon went on a 12-step call and was shot, killed off a porch. And he had gone alone. And we've always told people that if you do go on a 12-step call, especially in the middle of the night, you don't know what you're going to run into or who you're going to run into. It is always to go with someone else. If you're skeptical about the person or what might be awaiting you there, it's good to meet in a neutral location if they're not drinking. Or tell them, the other thing is, tell them if you still feel the same way in the morning, call me back and leave your number. But we don't take chances, you know. Went on a 12-step call and picked up, or went to a guy's house. He lived in a beautiful home. 3 o'clock in the morning. And he had a row of PhDs and different things. Very smart man. He was a controller for one of the big companies in Erie. And my sponsor, who I was with at the time, he told us, you guys don't have nothing compared to what I have. And my sponsor said, I never graduated from high school, but I have one thing you don't have, and that's sobriety. And we left. 4 days later, 3 o'clock in the morning, he called back, and we went and picked him up, and we took him to a rehab, and he said that bothered the shit out of him. But we were honest about it. You know, it doesn't matter what you have. It really doesn't. You know, and he's still doing my sponsor's taxes. And he's got 20-some years of sobriety. But I could go on and on about the 12-step calls I've been on. I'll give you one insane one. A woman just won the Pennsylvania lottery, and her husband called and said, you know, she left town, she's gone. She actually went to Canada. And he was a police officer. And so we went over and went to his house and we sat down talking. And I was with Joe Marazzo. Some of you may remember Joe. And he said to, Joe told me, shut up. Because he's telling us that his wife called him from Canada and said that if he got sober, she would buy him a bar. So the insanity of alcoholism, now you see why there's a need for Al-Anon. So I stood up and I said, you really don't want to get sober. And he said, who the F are you? And I said, I got what I got. You know, and I'm happy with who I am. And we left. So, I mean, there's so many different experiences, you know, that you can go on and on and on about. And funny things. We used to buy pizzas when we'd sit in the intake units for all the girls that were working nights because they had to put up with the drunks we brought in. And some of them smelled so bad that you would want to throw up. And those people cleaned them up and worked with them and got them sober, you know, or dry. And God bless them. I don't know if I could do that all the time. You know, do us like that. Because, you know, they've thrown up on themselves. There's blood on them. And they do that day in and day out while we're here. We're out here doing what we do. They're on the front lines. And I, you know, say a prayer for them because we can be really nasty sometimes. And I always take somebody with me because I need, you know, if I'm driving and somebody's freaking out, I need somebody to punch them out. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. I don't put up with that crap. So, yeah. Anything else?
Good job.